Football fans, the wait is over. Playoff football is back in action this weekend, and now with Bet365, you can get in on it too. Starting Thursday, Bet365 is offering to double your money with a super boost on one or more passing yards in the Denver versus Buffalo game. That's right, all it takes is one single yard. So even if your team doesn't start strong, you can. Only with Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Select markets only. Minimum, maximum, wager, and fixed boost percentage applies. Super boost for single bets only. T&Cs and restrictions apply.
When it gets right down to it, time to make that shot on an animal, whether your knees are shaking in a whitetail stand or you're huffing and puffing because you just climbed over the next peak out west, that 6-inch brace height on that bow is not going to allow you any room for error. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the RHO podcast. This week, I'm flying a little off the cuff. I don't have a complete plan of what I'm going to talk about. I've got a few things down here that I want to hit on, but as I get to the end, I've just got some thoughts that I'm going to get out that I want to share on a conversation that I heard recently. But before all of that, don't forget about our partners on the podcast, Racks Big Game Supplements. You guys can go to racksbiggame.com and see everything they have to offer. You can also find local dealers on there. Rodney Hawkins is our other partner. He's got RG Outdoors locally in Flora, Illinois. He's also on Facebook with that, at RG Outdoors. And he's also a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. I want to think he sold something like $11 million worth of ground and residential property combined last year alone. So if you are looking to buy property or sell a property in Illinois, you can get a hold of him at 618-925-3153, and he can help you out with that. One more thing, a couple more things before we really get into the meat of this one here. I think I mentioned, maybe, I don't remember if I mentioned it on a podcast or I just talked about it with Austin after the last podcast that we did. But starting a new series, it's going to be Ridge Hunter Reacts. So what that'll be is when one of these videos that you see goes viral, like, sometimes you'll see some crazy video of two moose fighting in a public area or coyotes running the streets or all this kind of stuff, or like maybe some crazy hunt or some bucks that got tangled up, stuff like that. I'll try to pick those out, and as they come along, do reacts videos to those. The first one is actually out Tuesday this week, so tomorrow if you're listening to this Monday, today if you're listening to it Tuesday, but that one is going to be a reaction to the Hunter Call of the Wild video game. So I'll also be doing some of that as well. Kind of like a react slash breakdown, if you will, especially on the video game one, because just kind of looking at it, how realistic is it? That kind of stuff. How's the gameplay? How does it compare to the games that we grew up playing versus, I mean, obviously what's out there now? That's kind of it. So I think that's going to be a really fun series. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. It's going to be a little bit different editing style than you're used to from the channel. We've had a couple videos that are kind of in that same vein as far as the editing goes in the past, but this will be kind of a new thing. I'm excited about it. I think it'll be a lot of fun. Hopefully, we can draw some new viewers with that. Also, I mentioned Austin. Full Draw Friday is back with him. He joined us for last Full Draw Friday, so if you have not seen that, go back and check it out. We talked about a lot of good stuff on that episode. We kind of got a rundown of his season because we hadn't talked since October 24th, I think, was the last Full Draw Friday he was on, somewhere right in that range. And I had killed my two bucks since then. He'd killed a really nice buck out in Kansas since then. So we got to kind of get the rundown of his season, how that went for him, what he was looking at going forwards, and all kinds of stuff we talked about. We got into a lot of strategy stuff there as well as we normally do. We chased some rabbits on that episode, but I think it was a good one. So if you haven't listened to that, go back to Full Draw Friday 94. I don't even know what number it was, but it was this past Friday. That one is up and available, which also reminds me, if you guys are on YouTube, go ahead and subscribe. That way you know when all this stuff comes out. Comment on this, some of your thoughts on the next part that I'm about to get into, and where I wrap this episode up. I think you guys are going to have some thoughts and comments, so feel free to leave those below. Our social media is Ridge Hunter Outdoors on Facebook and Instagram. We'd appreciate a follow there as well. So we just got back last weekend from the ATA. So I wanted to kind of do a rundown on that because that's what we did last year and the other year that we went to it when we went and helped the Radix guys out in their booth. I wanted to kind of give you guys a general idea of what went on or what we saw, just a few notes from the show, I guess. It was going to be different this year, and I'm curious to hear about how that went. But to start off with, my favorite part of the ATA and all of these shows, really, is getting to see the people that I don't get to see all the time, and I kind of text back and forth occasionally or talk to on the phone, but no one gets to actually talk to them in person, say hi, shake their hand, all that kind of stuff. That's always my favorite part of that. Especially like ATA, Deer Classic, with us not going to the Iowa Deer Classic this year, this is going to be the only time I'll see a lot of these people probably until August, unless something happens between now and then. So I enjoyed that part of it, catching up, talking about how everybody's season went, talking about their plans for this year, getting with them on, you know, bringing them back on the podcast and things like that. That's always my favorite part of all of these shows, and the ATA is no different for me when it comes to that. As far as products we saw, this is a conversation we had a lot around the ATA while we were there, on the way there, amongst ourselves. Used to, the ATA had exclusive things at the event. So unveiling a new bows, new products. It was the place for companies to unveil their new stuff because before the internet, people had to go to their local dealer. They had to see the previews of all this stuff in a catalog or a magazine or something like that, or maybe they'd saw it on TV. And they had to go to their local dealer and talk to them about it. And then the dealers would go to the ATA, and then these big companies would be there, and they would unveil all this stuff, and then they would send home all the marketing material with the dealers. So then these people would come back into the dealership and check out all the new stuff with us out, whether they actually got to put their hands on it or they're just looking at pictures, they're looking at the new catalogs, the new product descriptions, bows, all that kind of stuff, all the specs coming out for those new bows and things like that. That was the ATA, and that's why it was such a big draw. The big companies had to be there to market their products to the dealers who had to be there to market the products that they were buying to the end user, right, that was coming in there. And there was not another way, really, to do that. Now, with social media, with the internet, everybody kind of knows at the same time when these new products come out and when the new bows drop, and everybody knows everything about them short of putting it in their hand, at the same time, because it's posted on social media, and I can get to it the same as your bow dealer can get to it, the same as anybody else in the industry can get to it, unless they're directly tied to that brand, whatever it may be. So there's not as much exclusivity as there used to be with the ATA, which is, in my opinion, one of the big reasons that the crowds aren't what they used to be and why the show isn't what it used to be. And I don't know how you fix that, other than you have to get these big names back there. You got to get the big players back. But I don't know how. I haven't sat down and thought enough about how you would go about doing that. I think I may have talked about that a little bit last year after the ATA, so you can go back and check that episode out. Maybe I had some better thoughts on it then. But I haven't thought about it in a while, so I'm not going to talk too much to that. But as far as some new stuff that we did see there that you guys probably have seen, because again, it's been on social media, but talking to Ethan and Jared, who are both partners with 2O, that's a brand that I didn't even know of until I saw them using it. And they've got some really good stuff. They've got like a full system from base layers up to your outer layers for camo. They've got a new whitetail pattern, like whitetail specific pattern that looks really sweet. And they've got a lot of good looking stuff that was at the show. So that was one thing that stuck out to me. I really liked their new whitetail pattern. That's something that I might look into. I've kicked around getting new camo for a while now, and I've just been hesitant to do it. Not that like the pattern is the biggest thing in the world to me when it comes to whitetails. When it comes to turkeys, you need to have a good camo pattern for sure. But when it comes to deer, it's not as important. I talked about this on maybe the last episode about hunting being a rich man's game. But to me, I would like to have something that has the full system and is good quality material, because I'm using stuff right now that's getting pretty old, and I just kind of have it all pieced together. I don't have a set like base layer that's made to go with the secondary layer that's made to go with the outer layer and built-ins when it face masks or gloves or all that kind of stuff. I don't have any of that stuff. So 2O is a brand that I've looked at recently potentially for that, because I think they've got some good stuff. So I did like their whitetail pattern. I do, honestly, when it comes to camo patterns, I like a pattern that looks good just for the aesthetic of it. Again, not so much because it's that important when it comes to deer hunting. It obviously helps. I mean, being able to break up your outline and all that is where it's important. And the better you can do that, the more you can get away with. So it's not like it's for nothing that they have a good new whitetail pattern. It's just obviously not the most important thing. I like the system. I like the quality of stuff that they have. And there's other brands out there that have that as well. But that was one of the ones that we saw that was new that I thought was pretty interesting. Another one that I hadn't seen anywhere, and I don't know how big the company is, but it was a couple that was there. So I don't know if it's just them. I think it may have been. But we stopped and looked at their booth, a 10x10 booth there, and they had it was kind of like a press for your arrow that would check the spine on it. So it would tell you which side of the arrow was the weakest. So essentially you put the arrow, it had fittings for the arrow, and you put it between these two plates on either end, and they could adjust the length all the way from, I don't know, 24 inches to 35 or something like that. The good range where you get all your arrows in it, any arrow that you might need. And you pull down on the top, you pull the handle down on the top, and it compressed your arrow just a little bit, just enough to get it to flex. And then you could see whichever direction that arrow was bending out was the weak side of the arrow. And you could mark that, and that way you could put your cocking vein where it needed to be. And just to check it, you spin that arrow just a little bit, do it again, that same side bends, then bam. You can save nock tuning time, and like you could tune all those arrows in no time at all, really, just as long as it would take you to press them in that thing, put them in that thing and press them down. I thought that was super slick, especially for everybody who is really into the nuts and bolts of getting that arrow to fly right and gets really in the weeds on that stuff. It was definitely more of a product for dealers who are going to be doing a lot of that stuff because, I mean, they need to be able to do a lot of arrows in a short amount of time, and that's another service they could offer, I suppose, in their shop. But again, for those guys that just like messing with bows and like messing with arrows and stuff like that, to add to your personal shop, if you will, your tool set that you have for your bow with your press and your vise and all that stuff, I thought that one would be a really good addition to anybody's bow shed. It would save a lot of time on nock tuning. You could figure that out really quick, it seemed like, with that product. I wish I could remember the name of a couple of these, and that's one of them. Also, VPA, who we've had on the podcast, you guys remember that. Hopefully, we've had them on a couple times. You guys can go back and check those out. But they've got a new broadhead out with an attached outsert that I thought was pretty interesting. And again, it's just like everything else they make, as far as I could tell, all solid one piece. And basically, on the end of the broadhead where it threads into the arrow, it had an outsert, which I thought was pretty sweet. I would like it more if they had it in a four blade or the two blade with the bleeders. I don't know if they're planning on doing that. I didn't ask. I didn't even really think about it at the time. But then it has a piece on the inside that you could get in different grains. So the actual broadhead itself was 100 grains, but then you can get a 25 grain insert as a part of that, or you get a 50 grain or 75, I believe, all the way up. So you get all the way up to 175 grains out of that setup. But it was pretty slick. You guys can check that out, I'm sure, on their website. I thought that was one of the more interesting things that we saw. We also saw a pretty cool new sight light while we were there. It was super bright. It looked like it was really easy to use. You could change the color of your fibers, of your pins, the fiber of your pins on your bow. That one was pretty interesting. One of them I did see that I wasn't crazy about was, and not because the product wasn't cool, because it was, but just for the application of it, was a thermal sight that goes on your bow. And again, I don't know if it's like a thermal scope, because guys are going to be putting thermal scopes on crossbows and stuff like that, but also most of that use is going to be for guns, for coyote hunting, predator hunting, and things like that. But the thermal sight on the bow, I don't see a lot of benefit to that unless you're trying to predator hunt with your bow, which most people are not. All I can see, I should say legal benefit to that, because all I can see is guys are going to put that on their bow and then they're going to shoot a deer 10 minutes after legal light. I had a buck come by this year that was 5 minutes late. It was a full moon. I probably could have shot him anyway, but I let him walk by because it was after shooting light. The really super mature 145-150 inch 10-pointer with stickers that came right in front of the stand. That's where I'm seeing people using this thermal for their bow. I don't even know if it's legal to have a thermal on your bow in a lot of places. I'm sure it's not while you're deer hunting in most places. But I'm not trying to like trash the product or anything. I just think there would be an ethical dilemma there with pushing that too hard. And I just see a lot of guys using that for the wrong reasons, I guess. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. It was just one that I was like, that's like an Amishman's dream right there. He doesn't have to make noise and he can go out at night and he can hunt deer. I'm not.
Football fans, the wait is over. Playoff football is back in action this weekend, and now with Bet365, you can get in on it too. Starting Thursday, Bet365 is offering to double your money with a super boost on one or more passing yards in the Denver versus Buffalo game. That's right, all it takes is one single yard. So even if your team doesn't start strong, you can. Only with Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Select markets only. Minimum, maximum, wager, and fixed boost percentage applies. Super boost for single bets only. T&Cs and restrictions apply.
Saying that's what's going to happen, for sure. Just saying it seems like something that could potentially come of that. So that was one that I wasn't necessarily crazy about seeing, but it was only a matter of time before somebody started doing that anyway. Overall, as I hit my microphone, overall, talking to the vendors there, it was kind of mixed reviews on the show. There's some guys who were like, it seemed pretty good. They were having a good show, and this was Thursday, so it was the second day of the business to business, if you will, part of the show. I'm curious to hear from them how the consumer portion went, because that was kind of the difference this year. Is the second, it was 4 days, the second 2 days were going to be for consumers to come in just like an expo. And I thought that might be a draw for some people, but it depended on the product, seemed like. Because we talked to some vendors who have bigger products, so they weren't able to take a lot in there to sell. And what they could take wasn't going to be worth it, because they weren't going to be able to make even a fraction of their booth cost up anyway. So some of them weren't crazy about that. Others who like maybe had broadheads or something to sell, or releases, or arrows, sights, all the smaller stuff, I feel like that could have worked out pretty well for them, because they could bring a lot of product in and sell that and make a lot of their money back potentially from their booth cost. So I'm curious to see how that turned out. It did seem like it might be a difficult transition for some of the vendors to go from dealing with in the industry and dealing with dealers and distributors and things like that, and turn around the next day and go into end user consumers, just because, like I said, the logistics of it and getting product there and switching your setup around and your point of sale stuff, and you got to have cash and all that kind of stuff going on. It seemed like it might be kind of difficult to just change gears and go from taking orders that you're going to fill in 2 weeks to, hey, this is here, you can buy it, and being completely ready for that. Because that's a totally different setup to do either, to do both of those things. Like I said, I'm sure it was easier for some than others, but we'll see how that went when I talk to some of the guys that were there and see if they got more people in. I'm guessing ATA will put out numbers at some point for how many people came through the doors, and we'll be able to see how well that went. It may be make or break for the actual ATA show. If they didn't get enough people in the doors for that consumer part, I don't know how much longer the show is going to last. There's been some rumors about it being purchased by other shows and things like that, so we'll see what comes of that. But that was kind of the rundown from the ATA, just some notes on it, some things that we saw, some things I liked, some things I didn't like, and kind of what we heard from everybody as far as that goes. So what I wanted to wrap up with, and I don't have any notes on this other than it literally says bow speed conversation, because I was listening to, actually, I think I was scrolling, and a reel came up, and it was Cam Haynes talking about, coincidentally, because I just posted a reel of him here recently, but he was talking about bow speed, and he was like, these people are still on forgiveness versus bow speed, and are we really still talking about that? Like, it really matters that much. And I thought, he's absolutely right, because I've never been, like, the big speed guy anyway, but if you think about it, go back 15 years And I was going to look up actual stats on this, and I didn't. And I might someday and do another episode or something else, some kind of other video on it. But if you go back 10, 15 years ago, how fast were the bows shooting? 350 feet a second, 360 feet a second. I think High Country had a bow that would shoot 400 feet a second, something like 15 years ago. You can double check me on that, but I think that's right. So in 10 or 15 years before that, how fast are bows shooting? 280, 300 feet a second was a really fast bow. So they were able to gain 50, 60, 100 feet per second in those 10 years. But in the last 10 years, we've just plateaued. Because what are bows shooting now? A lot of flagship bows are 333, 340, right in there. That's because they found the sweet spot. And Dad told me this. He's told me this several times. Matt McPherson, who you guys don't know, is a founder of Matthews Archery, said 25 years ago that the industry had reached the limits of what a compound bow could do as far as speed goes without just the bow blowing apart. And you know what? He was probably right, because at that time, they had some bows out that were shooting 320 feet a second, and they got up a little bit farther than that. But now, there's a reason nobody is left chasing that. And this was something I followed up on that video from Cam Haynes, and he'd done another podcast with Greg Poole, I believe, and they were talking about this conversation. And Greg made the point that none of these bow companies are still chasing speed, because it's not that it's completely irrelevant, but they weren't selling that many speed bows. It was something like 25% of their sales, I think. So they would market these super fast bows as their flagship and number one, and people would come in and shoot them, and it's not a fun bow to shoot, and then they'd buy something else. So they've started going more towards tunability and forgiveness and shootability and all that stuff. That's why you see all these bows now that have the different ways you can tune them and how you can mess with them without a bow press and things like that. Instead of, okay, man, now we got a bow that shoots 450 feet a second, right? And ultimately, what Cam was saying that I agree with is you can have a bow that shoots 360 feet a second, 350 feet a second, and you can have that super light arrow. But if you have a 6-inch brace height on your bow, when it gets right down to it, time to make that shot on an animal, whether you're knees are shaking in a whitetail stand or you're huffing and puffing because you just climbed over the next peak out west, that 6-inch brace height on that bow is not going to allow you any room for error when you're at your likeliest point to make an error in your shot. It doesn't take much to get your anchor point off. It doesn't take much to get your grip off just a little bit and torque that bow. The more forgiving bow you have, the more forgiving of a bow you have, the more likely you are to make that shot still. That was kind of his whole point on the deal. And there's a relationship between speed and kinetic energy and arrow weight and all that stuff. And draw length, of course, too. That's the other thing that gets lost in all this. If you have a 28, 27-inch draw length, you're never getting 350 feet a second anyway. You just can't do it because those bows are maxed out when they hit those speeds. So you're better off to just draw a little bit more weight and, in my opinion, shoot a little bit heavier setup. And then you're going to be way better off when it comes down to hunting and killing that animal. If you're talking about target shooting and you want a super flat shooting bow because you have unknown distances and stuff like that, that's one thing. But when you're talking about a hunting scenario, when you've got your rangefinder, when you're in the heat of the moment and you might not be doing everything perfectly, you're not standing on a flat range staring at a piece of paper. And let's be honest, the drop in an arrow difference between your fastest setup you could possibly get out of your hunting setup versus that 265 to 295 speed is not going to be that much difference if you're aiming for the lungs on an animal. We're not talking about dropping shots in a contest so you can't shoot a 300. We're talking about trying to keep an arrow in the lungs of an animal, which is a way bigger target, and do that effectively. And so your pin gaps aren't as big of a deal. You might as well be set up to give yourself the best chance to kill that animal efficiently, have the most forgiving bow possible with closer to a 7-inch brace height and this is for all you Levi Morgan fans, Greg had, in that podcast, also mentioned, it was either Greg or Cam, one, had texted him and was like, hey, what's your archery setup, brace height versus your hunting setup? He said what's your competition setup? And his brace height on his competition bow was closer to 6 inches, and his hunting bow was right around 7 inches. Because you need the forgiveness for hunting way more often. Sure, you can kill stuff with those super speed bows, and some guys out there are way better than I am, and you guys are perfect, and you can do that every time. That's great. I just think I lean more towards what Cam Haynes was saying about shooting a forgiving bow with a little bit heavier setup and being dialed in to kill an animal. And you need energy, and you can get that from a heavier setup with a little bit less speed too. And I'm not talking like 700 grains. I think the arrow that I've got right now is between 550 and 575. I don't remember exactly where I'm at on that because I haven't weighed them since the beginning of the season. And I shot them and I don't remember what it was, but it was somewhere in that range. And the other reason is I built multiple arrows this year and I can't remember which numbers in my head go with which arrows. But anyway, regardless, shooting somewhere in that range, I've got an 80-pound bow that has a 6 3/4-inch brace height, and it's a Bowtech, so I've got the cams on the comfort settings because I don't need to get the absolute most performance out of that thing. I want to be able to draw it and shoot it. And I think that bow is 32 inches axle to axle. It might be 34. It's an SX80, so you could look it up. But that setup, to me, is ideal for the type of hunting that I'm doing, which is whitetails in the Midwest mainly. And I would have no problem taking that bow out west and hunting anything out there with it either, because I have the kinetic energy with that setup at, I don't know, 265 feet a second to shoot as flat as I need to out to 60 yards or more if I practiced and kill anything that I'm shooting at. The second buck I shot this year was at 42 yards. And that setup, again, probably 265, 270 feet a second. He went 80 yards. I hit him through the liver and back of the onside lung, center punched the offside lung, and came out the other side. Complete pass through. He went less than 100 yards and piled up. The first buck I shot 15, 16 yards, quarter and to me, punched right through his scapula, put a hole in the other side of him. He went less than 100 yards, less than 80 yards. Same deal with the doe I shot, went 100 yards. I hit her through the onside shoulder. Pretty steep angle on that one as well because she was close, and we were in an 18-foot blind. And went right through her. She went maybe 100 yards. She might have went the farthest out of any of them, honestly. But that's, I don't know, those are just some thoughts I had on that because I know a lot of people are still, maybe not a lot of people, maybe more people are coming around to, we don't need to shoot just as fast as possible because the benefits of it, the detractors outweigh the benefits, I think, for the majority of hunting scenarios. I'll put it that way. And another thing they talked about was bow weight too. And there for a long time, they tried to get lighter, lighter, lighter. Well, you get this really light bow and then you put all this junk on it that makes it heavy. And honestly, the heavier your bow is, the easier it is going to be to hold steady anyway. If you just hold your arm up with nothing in it, hold your hand up, put a little twig in it or something, try to hold that steady, and then put a 4-pound bow in it and try to hold that steady, which one are you going to be better with? The 4-pound bow. Now, we're probably talking 6-7 pounds after you put everything on it. And it just kind of reminded me of the bow that Dad's shooting that's 20-something years old with his aluminum arrow setup. And I don't know what the brace height is on that bow. It's over 7 inches. But he's been killing deer with that thing forever. And it still works to this day. And it is a locked-in whitetail hunting setup, hunting bow. And it's a heavy son of a gun, too. But it's like all that stuff, we kind of got away from it for so long because all these companies got in this speed race. And then everybody thought speed, 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 you got to do speed. And some people still think that. And maybe it's finally coming back down the other way. I don't know. It just was nice to hear somebody with that kind of influence and that kind of clout talking about that. And he got some crap for it for sure. And that's anything anymore. Especially when you put it on social media or put it out there for people to listen to or to watch. So that is what it is. But it was nice to see him saying that. And because that's kind of always how I have thought about it. I want to be on the heavier side of the arrow weight. And I don't care if I'm shooting 300 plus feet a second, as long as it's not dropping 10 inches at 30 yards, then you're in good shape. And I think the industry is reflecting that, which means the end consumer is reflecting that as well. So anyway, those are some thoughts I had. Guys, let me know what you think in the comments. If you're a speed guy, that's fine. Hey, you get it done. I know a guy right now who might be listening to this who shoots light arrows out of a bow, and he wants the most speed he can get, and he kills a lot of stuff too. So it absolutely can be done. I just think in most cases, you're going to be a little bit better off with a more forgiving bow. And let's be honest, most people don't practice enough to where they're 100% confident all the time. And I fall into that category. I want a more forgiving bow for that too, because I don't practice as much as I should during the season. And most people, I think, fall into that category. So you're going to kill more stuff with a forgiving bow. Let's put it that way. Again, let me know what you guys think. Appreciate you tuning in. Make sure you like the video too if you liked it. And if you're on Spotify, if you're on Apple Podcasts, follow us there. Again, on YouTube, you can subscribe. I will catch you guys. Hopefully, you watch the Reacts videos, and I'll see you there. But if not, I'll see you this Friday for another episode of Full Draw Friday.